This podcast was originally live streamed on the Non Sequitur Show on YouTube. New episodes air weekdays, Monday through Friday, at 8 p.m. Eastern at youtube.com/nonsequiturshow. Make sure you never miss a live stream by visiting www.nonsecshow.com/schedule. For the latest news, polls and updates throughout the day, follow us on Twitter at nonsecshow or facebook.com/nonsecshow. That's NONSEQ show. If you'd like to get exclusive content, bi-weekly private hangouts with Kyle and Steve, backstage access to chat with guests after shows hosted on your channel and much more, become a Patreon saint of Non Sequitur. It ensures we continue to improve our show and brings you into the process at the same time. Visit patreon.com/nonsequitur today while the limited spots are still available.
The following podcast is intended for those who believe bold ideas are righteous, unique perspectives are gospel, and strong opinions are sacred. This is Non Sequitur. Never follow. And now, here are your hosts, Kyle Curtis and Steve McRae.
And now, welcome to Non Sequitur with Kyle Curtis and Steve McRae.
God, man, Steve has gotten good looking.
Sorry about that.
He has an automatic trigger to trigger, I think. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the show. This is Opinionated with myself and Casey. Hello, Casey.
Hi, y'all. Hey, Kyle. How's it going?
Excellent. And we are joined by the one, the only... the infamous and notorious DJ Kirk. How's it going?
Hi, everybody. It's going, I guess, fine. I don't know. Oh. I don't know the status update thing that people do. I'm fine.
I think most people though, don't they just ask that out of like, if you think about it.
Right, it's like perfunctory, obligatory bullshit, you know, like whatever.
Yeah. I care, but
I'm not saying you're a store clerk. I just, you know, generally.
Yeah.
Society.
With some people, that's the way that it is. Totally.
Right.
Casey, anything that you have coming up that you want to plug, get out of the way before we.
I have a midterm. That didn't sound right. So I have a midterm this week. So right now that's where my stuff is at. I have Today I Learn's coming back next week. So that's pretty much it.
Good series. For us, just to let you guys know, on Monday, Jesse Lee Peterson will be here. I can't wait. It's amazing. Do you know who that is, Casey?
No.
Oh, okay.
Oh, well, you're in for some fun.
Yeah, it's wild. And then Tuesday we have JF Gareppi. I hope I'm saying that right. He will be in a debate with John Perry from Stated Clearly. They're going to be talking about social norms. And then the next Tuesday on the 26th, last thing, Lawrence Krauss will be with us to talk about Something from Nothing. So make sure that you're there for that. TJ, first of all, thank you again for taking the time to join us. What was it? I mean, cause I think everybody knows who you are, so I don't think there's a need for me to say
banana guy. TJ. Yeah.
Yeah. The banana guy. Yeah. You know, it was
I'm
funny.
Shooting that guy.
I'm glad that you said that because, Casey and I were talking right before you actually came in and, she was like, I'm going to send you a question that I got. Do you think it's like, it was kind of like we were like, somebody wanted to know about the banana situation. And I was like, well, if he brings it up, then I'm sitting here thinking, if he brings it up, then maybe. But
I'm leading with it. Yeah. You know,
yeah.
You gotta,
which is good.
If you're even remotely famous, you got to hit on the top echelon of the things you achieved in life. You know,
I agree. And, I agree.
I think that's it.
So you wouldn't say that's like your bottom moment.
I mean, in one sense, sure. You know, no. I mean, I don't care. I don't really perceive reality that way with highs and lows. And I mean, that's all a bunch of constructed shit. There's just the grind, the daily grind. Life's a shit sandwich, and every day is another bite. My uncle often says, and I find that I. By and large, adopt that same mentality. So, yeah. It's all just one big thrumming low.
This is an example of the, like, your kind of style and the way that you do things.
I mean,
has always kind of stood out.
I don't know. Oh, okay.
I think you do.
I don't know.
I think you do. I think you have my style.
If a style, I, well, if maybe just I guess insanity. I don't know. Whatever.
What was it that made you get into YouTube? I want to start out with some questions just about you first, and then we'll get into some of the things like this going on political. But what got you into YouTube?
Rock on. YouTube. I don't know. A loud, opinionated person. But very passive, I think, in my day-to-day life. I usually don't find that it's worth it to be disruptive. I think a lot of times, especially early on, I got the reputation of like, oh, well, you know, you're like everything that is a negative stereotype of an atheist, because you're like a loud mouth and you're very forceful with your opinions. And, you know, the reality is that I'm that way on YouTube so that in my, you know, that's like the therapy sesh or whatever. And, you know, my day-to-day life, if someone's like, let us now bow our heads in prayer, I'm going to be the person who's okay. I'm going to respect that tradition or whatever, even though if you ask me about it, I'm going to tell you, I think it's stupid, but I'm not going to like prayer faggot, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just, I guess initially it was attractive as a place to vent thoughts and opinions that I didn't necessarily want to say in day-to-day life. Not that I never say them, but, you know, I find that people tend to think so differently, especially when you live in the South, from the way I think, that, you know, a lot of times it's really just a bother to talk to people about it, especially when you know it's not like they're gonna become enlightened about it or anything. So I have it you know, a place where people can go to hear my opinions if they want to hear them, and if they do, then yeah, cool, that's great for me. And if not, then whatever. I mean, I'd be doing this if there was five people listening.
What was it, do you remember, was there certain like a video or something that you said that really kind of kicked off where you are today?
I think the first major milestone was probably when I made a video reacting to Sarah Palin as the announced vice presidential selection of John McCain. And I was like, this woman is an idiot. And I can't believe this is happening. I've seen her on Glenn Beck, and I could tell you that she is about one of the emptiest talking heads I've ever seen. And she got a really big popular fan following, of course, during that election, not enough to win John McCain the election. I think it was an unwinnable situation for him, but wow, it would have been disastrous to elevate that woman to that position of power. But it was that video that got me my initial, I think probably the first time I ever broke a million views on something. It was also the first big burst, because YouTube ad revenue was just starting and was kind of experimenting with it. No one really thought it was going to be anything. And I guess ultimately it turned out not to be. But at the time, I got a huge, big infusion of cash. And I was like, at that point, it was my hobby and I was doing something else for a job. And I was like, well, I need to get rid of this job and just do this. because I love doing this. So then from that point on, YouTube was a job as well as a hobby. But, you know, I think I'd still do it as a hobby, even if it weren't a job.
Yeah. You sometimes get a rep for being controversial, like you said earlier, but probably the most from watching you, you took a stance, I think, and it was so funny to watch people's reaction to it. And I'd just like for you to kind of reiterate this point, but you took a stance against soccer, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah. I've noticed that the things that end up being the most controversial tend to be things that I think are just silly. The biggest backlashes I've ever got have not been over huge political opinions. They've typically been over very, like, relatively minor issues, like anti-soccer. Wow. So many people pissed. I lost like 10% of the fan base I had at the time over the soccer video.
I also hate soccer.
So don't say that.
Yeah. Yeah, I just said it. I stand by it. Hate soccer.
It sucks. criticizing Ron Paul back during the Re-Love Ocean, if you remember that. That was bad. Yeah. I guess that was at least to do with politics, but I mean, it was like, whatever. He's not going to be president no matter what. So I criticized him, lost a bunch of people over that, a lot of outrage, criticism of Buddhism. Those people are not, they're not used to being criticized. Muslims and Christians got a little bit of a thicker skin, honestly, just because they've been through the ringer a few times. Buddhists, not really used to it. So they got really mad. I got more death threats criticizing Buddhism than I've ever gotten criticizing Islam, which is
fascinating. That's irony. That's irony. Yeah,
for sure. What else? Bicyclists. Laura Croft. That was a different situation, because that wasn't organically a bunch of people mad at me. That was a few people mad at me, not even really that bad, but international media writing stories about it. Because I said that I thought the actress who was playing Lara Croft did not have big enough tits, which is a throwaway position for me. It's really just like, you know, hey, I'm going to throw this out in the world and see what happens. And what happened was, media outlets across the globe writing up articles about, you know, can you believe what this random nobody on Twitter said about the new Lara Croft, huh? And trying to create some outrage. And I think it was really just because they were salesmen for the movie, and they wanted to say, hey, if you're against this movie, you're sexist, so go see this movie and be an enlightened, woke individual, basically. So I was basically just used as a marketing gimmick to sell Lara Croft Tomb Raider, you know, number 3 or whatever it is.
So I have a question.
But, yeah.
You say it was like a, you say it was the Lara Croft thing was a throwaway position. So like, do you just sometimes say things to get a reaction and don't actually believe what you're saying, or are they actual positions? Like, I'm just wondering,
Bullshit,
or are these your actual positions?
It's a good question. I think that it was, well, once I said it and it got attacked, it became my official position. I'll say that much. When I actually wrote it out, I didn't care about it. I don't know what my position was. It was just a, like, an impulsive kind of like, her tits are too small, I'm going to tweet that because I don't have any filter. And then, you know, then when I was forced to defend it, then it became like, yes, I think this is actually important to her character. Am I strong about, like, am I passionate about that? No. But, you know, like, yeah, I mean, sure. I've definitely have thrown shit out there into the world just to see what's going to happen. Like, you know, because one of my favorite things to do is toss some crazy shit out there on Twitter or whatever, and just seeing different groups of people fight over it. Like the other day, I'm just like, all right, I'm just going to create this straight up and down poll of, is it anti-Semitic to criticize Israel? ? Yes, no. No, maybe, nothing, no other options, just that's it. And just like the sheer, I mean, like, of course, there was full of the anti-Israeli, pro-Israeli comments, the nuanced trolling of, you should have given us another option, because sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. Yeah, but I'm asking you if it's inherently that, you know, and just watching the chaos unfold, watching people spurg out and get mad at each other, you know, not even participating any further in the dialogue, although maybe I did a couple, but yeah, I do that all the time. Yeah. So as to whether or not so that's
you bait people.
You know, I wouldn't even call it bait because it's not like they're not already going to have whatever reaction. I just want to poke them with a stick. And I'm not really.
That's what baiting is.
I'm not really looking for, but I'm not really trying to elicit some particular response from them or any response necessarily. I'm just trying to rile them up and see what they do.
I get, you know what? I get that because the biggest Twitter like feud that I've ever had, I mean, and it went on for like a week solid, and there were people who were like just getting crazy over this was a circumcision thing. It's the issues that you think are, I mean, that's a big issue to a lot of people, but you wouldn't think it would be as like heated as it was, because there were people like getting just intense over
well,
this.
It's everything though. I mean, like people get intense over movie opinions or show opinions. I mean, like things about entertainment and stuff. I mean, I'm still recovering from that fucking Will Smith genie, so I can't talk.
Oh man,
I'm traumatized.
That is bad. Have you seen the genie, Casey? The Aladdin.
Yes, it's it's a little
man. It's not right. It's not right.
No, I wasn't. I mean, I'm really excited to see the movie. Like, don't get me wrong. I loved Aladdin when I was a kid. I'm really depressed that I'm really upset that like Robin Williams is not around to be the genie. I don't know. He just looks, and I didn't realize it's live action and not cartoon. So like, I get it's going to look different, but it's just a little, I don't know, man. It's weird. I sent it to my mom and she was like, what fresh hell is this? And she ended up making another movie.
I put it in my thumbnail of a video I did about it, and people were like, I thought that was just like a terrible Photoshop that you did. I didn't know it was supposed to be. That's really the okay. So yeah, that was
what's gotten like kind of out of those things that you were naming a second ago, those things that have pissed people off the most, the one that's getting the most reaction right now is the bike, the stance on biking in
bicyclists. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they're very.
What's your problem, Casey? And of course, can I just like lay this out right out? I don't follow you. I've never watched any of your content. I don't really know a whole lot about you. So I know of you, obviously.
Yeah.
You can't really be part of the atheist community and not. But I've never just watched or followed any of your shit. So I did some research, you know, kind of looking up stuff. What's the deal with the bicyclists? Like, what's the problem?
The problem.
I'm just curious.
The problem with bicyclists is that they have a little bunch of pipes and a wheel, and they think that that entitles them to the same road that I drive a 2 or 3 ton combustion engine powered machine that can easily squish them like a bug, you know, but they're still on the road on a vehicle with a top. Yeah, it's a public roadway. But, you know, I don't see people riding horses on it. I don't see dune buggies and go-karts and shit on it.
I agree with him on this.
Why is there this special exception for your fucking faggoty hobby? No.
I agree with him on this. I agree with him on this.
It's for cars. It's not for bikes. Put in a bike lane. Get your city to put in a fucking bike lane or something. You know, ride in that.
That's it. You provide.
Get out of my fucking way. You're in a slow piece of shit vehicle that is powered by pedals, and I have to go around you, and I'm terrified that I'm going to hit your ass unless I'm way over on the other side of the street, in which case I got to wait if there's oncoming traffic coming, you know? So I don't know. They're just an inconvenience to me. So I don't like them.
I agree. The bike lane's fine. Like I'm totally okay with bikers like being on the road or whatever. But when you're driving on the road and you have like tight lanes, like, you know, it doesn't work.
I mean, if you're on a 2-lane road that's pretty heavily trafficked, a bicyclist on that road can cause like up to a 5-minute delay just because they're riding a fucking bike. And that's bullshit. You know, I don't, no other vehicle is allowed to do that. If you were on there on like, I don't know, like, I guess sometimes we do make exceptions for like heavy equipment, like tractors or something, but you know, no one's riding their dune buggy on that. No one's riding their golf cart on the fucking street where the speed limit is 50 miles an hour.
Well, so like horses and buggies can ride on the roads. Like, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I grew up in Amish country.
If you're in an Amish, if you're an Amish country, there's like laws that protect them to do that. But like around here, they wouldn't do that.
Well, I don't know where you live, but it just, I mean, there's still a
lot. Well, maybe we can install horse lanes. Maybe we can install, horse lanes.
But look, if you go to like Amsterdam or something, there's the road and there's bike lanes everywhere. And they're woven into the infrastructure of how the city works and how traffic works. Here in America, maybe in some places we've done that. And I'm sure, you know, like there's places with bike lanes and stuff, but there's not that level of integration everywhere in this country. So a lot of times people are just driving their bikes on the road and they're a detriment. They're a detriment to everyone riding a vehicle, which is the vast preponderance of fucking people.
Yeah.
But, you know, it did piss a lot of people off.
Yeah. So to kind of keep with the same theme, how would you describe what your political leanings are? Because you look at both sides of the in terms of parties, and you can find things with issues with each. But how would you sum up your sort of political leanings?
Libertarian leftist.
Libertarian left. And what just for people who may not know what that means or who haven't seen what you do. What describe some of the things that you like are important to you and where you disagree with the standard two-party system?
I don't inherently disagree with the notion of a two-party system, but if you have a two-party system, then it should represent at least two different points of view. And right now, I mean, go look at the website that tells you I don't remember the URL offhand, but there's a website out there that'll tell you where everyone is in terms of their votes against or for Donald Trump's proposals and his agenda. And it's pretty crazy to look at because you see that there's not really two parties that are distinctive in identity. There's this gradient and there's some Democrats that are way up there in voting for Trump stuff. There's some Republicans that are way down there. And that's a lot of it because the standard of what's a Democrat and what's a Republican is different state by state. Like a California Republican that's actually holding office is probably a Democrat in, you know, Louisiana where I live. The problem is that on a lot of issues, the two parties really don't seem too divided with each other. Like our foreign policy of both parties is pretty much the same. There's not a party, for instance, that represents as a whole non-interventionism. There's not a political party that as a whole represents, you know, let's tax Wall Street a little bit stronger. Let's tax billionaires a little bit more. Now, there's candidates on the Democratic side that have those positions, but the Democratic Party itself still pretty friendly to big business. And I feel like if you're going to have a Democratic Party, it's the job of the Democrat Party to represent the interests of workers and common people. The Republicans are supposed to be the party that represents big business. When you have two parties doing that, then there's no real opposition on that issue. So, you know, a lot of people, when you say the two parties are the same, they like to point out, well, they're different here and they're different there and blah, 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 blah. And of course, that's true. But when there's issues as big as foreign policy and how we regulate business where these parties are in virtual lockstep, that's a problem. So in terms of what I believe in a leftist economy. I believe in a mixed economy with capitalism. I call myself a capitalist, but I believe in strong regulation of the markets. And as terms of individuals, I believe in the strongest and most robust individual liberty that you can have within the confines of that system. So that means, you know, I don't think someone has a right to own a business that pollutes the river. But I do think that person has the right to, you know, dress up as Shirley Temple and get their ass spanked or whatever the fuck.
Mm. Right.
But they don't have the right to drive a bike on a road.
No.
No. Absolutely not.
They're just logic change. Okay.
Because all right. Fuck bicycles.
No, but I would be I'd be totally in favor of them getting their bike lane. So go ahead and do that.
So how do if you had to sum it up right now, I know it's a little early and we can't really tell full on, but if you were to vote right now, how should America vote in 2020? Because, you know, everything is getting ready to ramp up.
I'm not going to speak for what America should do, because America is a huge variety of people that all are in different walks of life with different interests. Like if I'm a billionaire industrialist or something, I'm going to probably be like, yeah, Trump's our man. You know, he just cut our taxes and all this stuff. So Trump, if you're that, if you're not that, then I'd consider voting for one of the, like, the people I like. And I'm not going to give anyone a glowing endorsement, but, you know, I would be partial to someone like Bernie Sanders, maybe Tulsi Gabbard in a pinch. Maybe you could say Elizabeth Warren's good. I just saw an interview with a guy, Andrew Yang, on the Joe Rogan show, who I think has some very interesting ideas. I think he might be a little out there for some people, but I don't know. Maybe check that out. Mm.
But, what's your opinion on Kamala Harris?
What's that?
Go ahead, Casey.
I was just going to say, you mentioned Elizabeth Warren, and I'm just curious, what was your thought on the whole, like, getting a beer video? Did you think that was as awkward as I did?
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about, right? Yeah, I thought that was super weird.
Go watch Elizabeth Warren's appearance on Bill Moyers in 1995, and she is a very soft-spoken, intelligent, professorial person, because that's what she truly is. She's an academic. She's a professor. She's a teacher, and she speaks in a calm and deliberate manner. And I haven't seen that Elizabeth Warren in a long time, because she was replaced by politician Elizabeth Warren, who sees, hey, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is doing all these down-to-earth streams, so I guess that's what I'm going to do. In search of an identity, yeah, just like, whole, but I mean, like, the whole it's the same as with the Indian thing, though, right? I mean, she's like a woman in search of a more interesting identity. It's like, no, just be yourself. And that's not
good. What are we going to say, Casey?
Oh, I was just saying, I kind of agree with you. I think she's trying to be a little more relatable to the general public, but it came off to me, I don't know, as like really super awkward. And I mean, I know she's trying, like, I get that she was trying and she had the best of intentions of, and it, like you said, she's soft-spoken and an academic, and that's probably totally outside of her wheelhouse, but it was just, I don't know, the whole thing. And then the thing with the husband, I don't know. I just thought it was super weird.
What's your opinion about Kamala Harris?
You know, I had a very neutral opinion of her to start with, because I didn't know much about her. Now I know that as a district attorney, she willfully ignored evidence that could have exonerated people. She willfully ignored evidence that cast doubt on the state's official story and suppressed it. I know that there were times that she had evidence that kind of showed that the state's case was not as strong as they were making it out to be, and withheld it from defense attorneys. Mm-hmm. So it seems to me that when she was district attorney, she likes to go around calling herself now a progressive. I was a progressive prosecutor. Well, there's not much to indicate that. What's indicated is that she was a very corrupt prosecutor, which I think is sadly pretty standard in our justice system. So I have my doubts about her sincerity. Now, she has embraced a lot of leftist sort of policies, and I guess that if you're someone who's gonna vote for a lesser of two evils candidate, she's probably not that bad. But I don't think that her a willingness to throw people in jail when you know that there's decent evidence out there that they're not guilty, or at least there's some doubt. There's a reasonable doubt, which, you know, if you look at our justice system, you're supposed to be able to prove your case beyond a reasonable doubt to actually get a conviction. So when there is a reasonable doubt and you suppress it, that shows to me that you really don't care about people, and that you just care about furthering your own career and agenda. So unfortunately, that's pretty standard for our politicians.
Politics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
What's the biggest issue that we as a society face today? You know, there's so many things you choose from global warming, immigration. Well, like what's the global warming?
Climate change. Impending. I wouldn't even have said this before today, but after watching Andrew Yang on Joe Rogan, if the statistics that he were providing. Was providing were accurate, then I would say automation, huge threat.
What was he saying about automation that troubled you?
Something like 20-30% of jobs will be replaced by automation in within the next 11 years.
Ooh, that is if that was the case, let's just play hypothetical here. What would people do?
Yeah.
That's millions.
Well, truck drivers are almost certainly going away. A lot of cashiers are going away. There's already restaurants operating in China without human beings present. So a lot of these restaurant jobs are going away.
How
a lot of jobs
go away because you still have to get products to places.
So
yeah, well, no, the trucks will be autonomous vehicles, which are. Yeah. Already in the testing phases. They're already 98% accurate, which of course you want a truck that's a driver that's 100% accurate. You can't have 2% of the time the trucks are crashing into things and all that. But once they master that last little 2%, what are you going to hire if you're a business owner? You're going to hire a human truck driver that is going to be way more likely to crash the truck once they improve the technology. It's going to be, it's going to need sleep. It's going to need to be paid on a regular basis. All this stuff. Or are you going to hire the machine that can drive in perpetuity and is 100% focused on its task and has been developed to be safer than a human driver? I mean, it's a no-brainer if you're a business owner. So that profession probably 10 to 15 years, there's not going to be a human truck driver.
So what does everybody do then? Like, what would people do in that case?
Why it's a fucking real problem. They were talking about during the Industrial Revolution, there was tons of riots as people lost jobs that were made obsolete by the Industrial Revolution. And this is going to be like the Industrial Revolution on steroids. There's going to be huge civil unrest. And we're already seeing civil unrest. I mean, because of automation, tons of factory jobs have been lost, not to overseas, not to immigrants, but to machines. Tons of businesses are shutting down shop because Amazon now gets their business. And a lot of Amazon is now going to be it's machines, and they're looking into the whole drone thing as well. I don't know. I think that's been that's been brought out in a few places. When you have most of the business is going to this, one company that uses total automation throughout their factories for the most part, and is now looking into delivering their goods via automation. I mean, like at some point, when all the money from the populace is going to that, that undercuts jobs. When the fucking burgers are being flipped by machines, that's jobs. I mean, there's just so many jobs that are just going to go like goodbye. I mean, even call center workers, the rate that the artificial AI is evolving is pretty crazy. So in 10 or 15 years, those people could find themselves replaced by a machine that someone on the other end of the phone can't tell the difference.
I saw something about that. Google's got a technology now, and they demonstrated it last year at a conference where you could even order a pizza. Your phone will be able to call the restaurant acting as you. It uses your voice to generate a sample set, and it can make calls for you and it act like it's you. With your voice.
Yeah. In our lifetime, it's probably going to be possible to I don't even call on the phone to order a pizza anymore, but even if you did, you could call on the phone, talk to an automated, like an AI, a basic little AI program to get your pizza. Your pizza's made by machines. It's put into a car by a machine. The car is an autonomous vehicle that drives to your house, or maybe they'll even have like pizza drones or something. Like, this is not far-flung sci-fi shit at this point. This is probably something we're going to see in our lifetimes, like, you know, 20 years tops. I mean,
maybe not
so
even
that's
that.
Right, so it's going to change. Well, I was being very conservative with that estimate because
they got Uber Eats, and Uber's trying to do automated vehicles, so automated pizza delivery is a heartbeat away.
Yeah, so I mean, like, but I mean, like, the point is that so many jobs from across the workforce are just going to be eliminated. You know, especially like unskilled labor, factory labor, stuff like that is just going to be more and more replaceable, and you know. Our society is going to have a real tough time acclimating to that. So,
just to kind of jet back to the global warming thing for a second, why don't you think that people? Because it's mainly, I believe we can agree, it's mainly the Republican side that's not kind of bending on the climate change. So for some reason, they've got those shades up. What is it about that you don't think that people who are in that camp see what's going on? Like.
I don't think it's that they don't see. I just think it's that they don't buy it. They don't believe it. Increasingly, it's shown that you know, the American public has come around to realizing that this is an issue. Why don't the Republicans that are, you know, the lead in the leadership, the you know, representatives, why aren't they on board? Because you know, I don't, it's not really very difficult to see. Just go look at their go to Open Secrets and. Go look at where they're getting their campaign money from. I mean, tons of them are receiving oil and gas money, and so are a lot of Democrats, by the way. You know, when your campaigns are funded by huge industries, like you're getting money from the you know, defense contractors, you're getting money from oil and gas, you're getting money from pharmaceutical. I mean, of course you're doing their fucking bidding. You know, you're getting hundreds of thousands of dollars from them. I'm not hearing anybody.
Hey, Casey, can you hear me, TJ?
Hey, I can hear you.
No.
Is Kyle out?
All right, I can hear everybody now. I just couldn't hear anyone for a second.
Kyle. It's Kyle's issue, so go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Do you want me to go ahead and ask some fan or viewer questions that I collected from the Twitters?
Sure, if you want.
Okay.
It's your show. I'm just here. Right. I'm along for the ride.
I don't know what's going on with Kyle.
I think he's saying one second, maybe.
Okay, hold on. Let me text him real quick.
This is ground control to Major Kyle.
Technical issues.
Hey, I know how it is.
You still can't hear me.
Shows are all. I hear you now.
We got you, Kyle.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Awesome.
Okay. Before we get to those the questions from the fans, I got three things that I want to run through real quick. We'll just switch screens real quick so that we can pull that up. Dave, if you'll move us to the big screen.
Move us to the big screen, David.
Move to the big screen. Dave, can you hear me?
Yes, Dave. I can. Yes, I can.
Okay.
Which one do you want?
We're going to start out with the Southern Baptist thing.
Okay.
So while Dave's moving us over, last night, if you guys watched the show last night, we had a guy that wrote an article called Gay Jesus is Coming. And basically his point was that gay culture is such that eventually – we, as me being a part of the gay community, and our agenda is to sort of hijack religion. In other words, we will be able to find a way to make Jesus somehow gay. There are verses that we'll be able to misconstrue, and that will be a way to sort of bring him into that culture, since we've done it with Hollywood and other things. And the rest of his article talked about how it was just a lot of things about homosexual sex, how it's not healthy, how it's what it can do to you, all this other stuff. So I find it ironic that today the headline is 380 Southern Baptist leaders and volunteers accused of sexual misconduct.
Yeah, and I think there's over 700 victims, right?
Between since 1998, 380 Southern Baptist leaders and volunteers have faced allegations of sexual misconduct. In the past 20 years, there have been more than 700 victims, with some urged to have abortions and to forgive their abusers.
Mm-hmm.
So, as the amazing atheist, and since you know you've had probably the loudest atheist voice for the longest period of time here on YouTube, what do you think about situations like this? When all the time we're hearing about how, since we don't have a belief in God, we can't have a moral compass. Like, there's
right.
You know that.
Well, I mean, the thing about this is, you know, it's the same thing you saw in the Catholic Church. I mean, you see the same thing in Islam. You see the same thing in like any of these powerful institutions where it goes beyond just we're a bunch of humans getting together. When you start putting people in the position of like, I represent God, I represent the creator of the universe, and you know, you put people in that position who are either evil people to begin with or are just corruptible or whatever, and they're going to abuse that power in a myriad of ways. And this is just one example of that power being abused by people who have basically got a bunch of people convinced that they're God on earth, or at least his representative, and that, you know, whatever he or she, I guess in some instances, maybe, probably not in the Southern Baptist thing, but whatever they say is just the gospel truth, and, you know, they're to be obeyed, and whatever commandments they lay down. Mm-hmm. Even if it's something that seems wrong or unreasonable, people are scared to question them because they think, well, this is my spiritual leader and I have to obey, because like, that's so much of what Christianity is about, is obedience. You know, and it's same thing with Islam. It's all about, you know, subverting your will to this higher power. But of course, the higher power is not manifest anywhere around you. So you have to go through this middleman who might be someone who's trying to exploit you in some horrendous way. And in fact, in most cases, usually it's financial exploitation, but obviously sexual exploitation is another form that takes. So really, to me, the solution to stuff like this is for people to realize the predatory nature of these people and to stop vesting this power in them. But unfortunately, people are addicted to religious dogma and doctrine. And so when they're addicted to that, as long as there's people out there willing to peddle that, and why wouldn't there be? Because there's a lot of power-hungry people out there who they view that as the primary means of achieving control over others. It's like George Carlin said, it's the greatest bullshit story of all time. And so you've got the promise of heaven, the fear of hell, and you're the master of it all in this person's eyes. So, of course, there's people who are going to abuse that in horrendous and disgusting ways.
I agree. Casey, what are your thoughts?
I mean, you know, I'm an anti-theist. I think religion is awful. And I think that this kind of stuff is not going to stop happening. It's not going to stop happening in Catholicism, and it's not going to stop happening with the evangelicals and the other Protestant religions or anybody else. You know, the way that Muslim men treat Muslim women is not going to stop. And it's terrible. I mean, religion is awful. And so, like, this particular story does not surprise me at all. They need to go to prison. People need to turn them in. But here's the thing that sucks the most, I think, out of, like, when you have stories like this, is that, like, the people in the community know shit like this is happening, and they don't turn them in. And that's the disgusting part, is that it's like the whole community rallies around these fucking sex offenders, and it's just, I don't even understand it. Like, my brain just cannot wrap around it.
Agreed.
Yeah, well, they think God's on that person's side. You know, you think that if you've actually been convinced that the creator of the universe, who controls your eternal fate, is on the side of the abuser, then, you know, you're scared to say anything.
Yep. Last week we did a show about Stephen Anderson and his his views on he's just vitriolic. The thing about
that's the virulent homophobe one, right?
Yes, the guy who he wished he said that trans people and gay people should just die. The government should execute.
That's his gay part people. And parcel. I remember him. Yeah,
yeah. The thing about that I find funny in today's society, if you take Trump, now let's just take the politics out of Trump, right? And you put what he stands for and what he's done. Did I go out again?
No.
No.
Okay. All right. throw some background noise that cut out. May have been Dave. But yeah, he, you take for what he stands for, what he's done, what he said, everything. And you put it on a dry erase board and you bring in a Christian and they don't know it's about Trump, but you say, would you support anybody that had any of these qualities? Right. I think they would pretty unanimously say no. However, for some reason, in some weird way, evangelicals have flocked to Trump. He can do no wrong in their eyes. Where does that come from? He's a billionaire on Wall Street backed. And then you've got the people in the Bible Belt who are under the poverty level. There's no similarities there whatsoever. And they couldn't be in worlds further apart. So where's that attraction come from?
Well, you know, a lot of it has to do with, you know, a lot of these places that are Bible Belt territory. There's a lot of fear of, you know, the big city liberal or the immigrant crossing the border and stealing the job or whatever. And I mean, you know, he plays to people's fears all the time. And he presents himself as a solution to that. And he pays lip service to religion. And even though it couldn't be more clear to me that his piety is completely and not even well manufactured, but it's clumsily manufactured piety. People are willing to accept it because he's blowing so much smoke up their ass on other things they already think, things that may be misguided, but it's still what they believe. And so as long as he parrots them there and says, yeah, I'm a Christian, then that's good enough for them. And, you know, I don't really think that the evangelicals follow him on the basis of piety. I think that he says, I'm pious. I believe in Jesus. I believe in God. And they're like, yeah, he's God like me. But really what their real bond is on more stuff about, like, he's going to build a wall. He's going to, you know, ban Muslims or whatever crazy promise he's made to them. That's the stuff that really galvanizes them towards him.
What do you think about the wall? Sorry, Casey, go ahead. They don't ask him about that.
Plus, they've been raised and told basically to believe that Democrats are evil and Republicans are the only way to go. So Trump is like the Republican person. And so they're going to follow him. And it's interesting that people in areas like the Bible Belt are Republicans, like that, besides the religious factor, which I think is the only reason that they're still Republicans, they depend on social programs and other things that Democrats support and Republicans don't. And so they vote against their own interests all the time when they vote for Republicans because fucking abortion. It's the craziest shit I have ever seen in my life.
Oh, there's a book about that called What's the Matter with Kansas? I forget the name of the author, but it's all about how Republicans use wedge issues to get people to vote against their own economic interest, which is from a social engineering standpoint is just dazzling. But from a logistical, pragmatic standpoint of having to live in this reality, it's not so great. But you asked about the wall, I believe.
Yes.
You know, I don't have super strong opinions about the wall. I think it's impractical. I do think that at least for a time, it would obviously create some jobs. It is a big public works project, kind of like the Hoover Dam or something. So, you know, I think that that's been effective in the past. So you could maybe make that kind of argument for it. But with a D plus or D minus infrastructure in this country. It seems to me there's a lot of public works projects that would do us a lot more good than a wall. We know that Mexico has tunnels into this country already. We find them all the time. So digging a tunnel ain't no big deal for them. There's tunnels out there that are really sophisticated with like elevators and like lighting and stuff. So, I mean, it's not that challenging, it turns out, for them to build a tunnel, especially if you're connected to a cartel and you're making, you know, huge profits on drugs. So I don't think the wall is efficient. I mean, like, and it's just like, it reminds me of the Maginot Line. It was a border, strongly fortified border built along the French border to keep the Germans out, and the Germans just went around it. And that's just all that's going to happen. You're going to get they're going to get some low front flying aircraft with some anti-radar equipment, or they're going to sail around it, or they're going to dig under it, or they're going to get a visa and enter legally and overstay. There's just, it's not a very effective thing. So it's basically just, I guess the best word for it is like a boondoggle to me. But at the same time, I don't think it's really harmful in many ways. I think it could probably do some ecological damage as it interferes with migration routes and stuff like that. You have to make a decision about what side of the wall the Rio Grande, I think, falls on. So there's stuff like that. So you're going to just give that to Mexico. It is actually kind of an important river. So I don't know. There's just a million logistical things that are just, you know, maybe would be worth looking into if it was actually going to solve a problem, but it's not going to solve any problem. It's just something that Trump promised on the campaign trail and people said, yeah, a wall. So now he feels like, well, I got to do that to cement my legacy. But I think if he does end up succeeding, it's just going to be a legacy of stupidity that someone in the future is probably just going to end up tearing down. So I guess it'll create jobs again. It's time to tear the motherfucker down.
I agree. Speaking of that, in sort of a way, let's go to the next story. This is going to touch on outrage culture a little bit and where we draw the line at what we get angry about. So this is a story where students force
a. FYI, I can't read the story instead like the pixel. Yeah, quality
it's It's because of the bandwidth. We stream out to everybody else in 1080p, but back to us, it's not that. But I'm going to read what it says. So basically, a group of students at a college forced a business to apologize, take down a sign that they had up, and it cost the business a lot of business. But here was their issue: a restaurant near the campus of Clemson University. Has upset students. Their grave error, naming one of its sandwiches the Tijuana Chicken Sandwich. The restaurant, named Loose Change, put a sign outside their establishment which read, "Big enough to feed a caravan, built high enough with smoked chicken, lettuce, tomato, pepper, jack, bacon, and guacamole, bordered with a side of pub chips, so good it should be illegal." Now that's it. That was the extent of the. Dave, if you'll scroll down a little bit so we can see the sign, people can.
I'm having a hard time scrolling this article for some reason. I don't know why.
Okay. It's not scrolling. Well, anyway, you can go to that article. But see, this is my view on things. Now, I know that there are issues that people do need to get angry about, protest, and just go after. But there are some things that I feel that we just go crazy for. And what happens, things like this are the reason that Trump, in my opinion, gets elected, because people who are on the right look at these sort of instances and go, okay, I want somebody that's not going to be for that, you know, so they default to a Republican.
Well, yeah, but let's be real here. The Republicans have tons of stuff like this too, whether it be I'm offended by the Gillette razor blade ad, or I'm offended by an NFL player kneeling during the national theme song, or
very good point.
A few years ago, Josh Feuerstein was mad about Starbucks cups not having an explicit reference to Jesus on them. Like,
very good point.
Whatever. There's all these like little butthurt fucking snowflakes out there, and they're not left wing and they're not right wing. They're everywhere. But as far as this goes, like every time I see a story like this, I'm just like,
Do we run out of real problems? Did we solve everything and I'm unaware and now we're going to be concerned about this? Like, look, I'll get pissed over stupid shit like the Will Smith genie or whatever, but I'm just venting. I'm not like, you know, I'm not going out with a picket sign like, no blue Will Smith genie, you know, like.
Although that deserves it, I think.
Right. If you want to, here's what I recommend. If you show up to this establishment and you see this sign and you say to yourself, I am offended by that sign, don't fucking eat there. Go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, I agree.
You don't need to. You don't need to virtue signal to the whole world about how great you are because I'm offended by the sign because I love illegals so much or whatever the fuck. Hey, if you don't like the sign, you think it's in poor taste, whatever. Don't fucking eat there. Vote with your feet and go to the Subway across the street.
That's good, Casey.
I can't totally disagree with that because while I think the whole sandwich thing, the whole thing was a little distasteful. Like if it's, I don't know, I wouldn't do it if it was my business, but it's not my business. So like, would I eat there? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. I don't really know what they're about, but there are places I don't shop or go for those kinds of reasons. I mean, not that kind of reason, but for other reasons, like I don't go to Chick-fil-A because they support hate groups. And so I just don't fucking go there and I don't make a big ordeal about it. Like there's people at my work who love Chick-fil-A. I don't like ride them over the rails over, you know, over eating Chick-fil-A. Yeah. Like I don't have a fucking panic over it, but I choose not to eat there. I don't shop at Hobby Lobby because I feel like they're terrible. I mean, they do have great prices and great shit. And so sometimes like it really bothers me, but like, I have to stand on that. I just can't go there.
Don't falter.
There's just some places like that.
There's a huge difference between the personal decision that you're making for yourself. And there's nothing wrong with you even going around and saying to people like, I don't eat there because of this, but there's a big difference to like literally try to sabotage the business or put public pressure on it to change or whatever. Like, you know, if you don't like something, vote with your wallet, vote with your feet. Don't try to destroy the business because it took a stance you don't agree with. I don't know why businesses out there are taking fucking stances to begin with. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but it seems like it's a popular thing to do nowadays. So
the thing is though, this went so far that the students at Clemson, they got together and their student government association as a whole for the university put out a statement on this, a statement saying that to summarize, it was very distasteful. The Clemson undergraduate student government denounces the incident that occurred last week with the sign posted outside of Loose Change, a restaurant downtown Clemson. The sign was offensive and very offensive and very distasteful. Our college stands for the voices of all students, and it's concerning that Loose Change would block the social media accounts of several student organizations after they expressed concerns with the incident. This situation greatly disappoints us, and we will not stand for those sorts of signs or our voices to be censored. This is an official statement from a university over a sandwich board.
Yeah, I just feel like we've lost the plot at this point.
Yep.
You know, like there's things that are worth putting your time and energy and effort into doing, and this is just simply not one of them. And I mean, hey, it's a free country. If you want to waste your time on writing the injustice of a slightly off-color sign at a sandwich shop, then you be my guest. You go right ahead. But personally, I think you're wasting your fucking time.
Mm. Well, how do you feel about go ahead, Casey.
I think there are things that are important to protest over, and I think public pressure is one of the things that makes for progress in society. So I think that stuff is important. And we all think that different things are important. I mean, people could say that you stood on the hill of Lara Croft's tits. So I mean, like, you know, they might
think
that's
stupid. More like a hill,
you know.
I would never make the case though that Lara Croft's tit size is actually important. to me, the humor was in seeing other people act like they were that important. Where, you know, I don't know, maybe there's a political statement being made here. Like, we'll all get really upset about the sandwich board to draw attention to, I don't know how ridiculous it is, but I don't think so. I think this is genuine anger at the board for making like what I feel like is a pretty neutral reference, honestly, at the end of the day to, you know, border security issues. But I guess it's just so hot button in people's minds. They feel like, you know, we're in this big fight with Trump that we might not win, but maybe we'll win the fight for the sandwich sign, you know, like some way of feeling some power in the situation.
It was a play on words, that, you know, or a big pun on a board. And to point out something, I think that back to the Lara Croft thing for just a second, thinking back, and I just pulled up a picture of like the original game. They do portray her in those original games with like overly sized breasts. I mean, they're like overly. I mean,
video games like always.
I'm just saying, you know, if you're looking back, that would be a noticeable thing.
Well, one of the things I was saying to people is just like, okay, like if we're gonna legitimately talk about this for a second, then one of the things I was saying to people, like, what if you had this character from, I don't know, a novel or whatever, something that was really popular with women, right? And there's this character, and it's very important that he be a sexy motherfucker. And then Hollywood announces like, yeah, we're casting The Amazing Atheist as that guy in a movie. And I come out, you know, fat and schlubby and like, hey, ladies, it's me, fucking sexual dream. You know, women are going to be like, boo, you know. Ooh, so, I mean,
50 Shades. What if TJ played 50 Shades?
I was going to say, if they didn't ask you,
it's Mr. Gray, bitch, bend over for your spanking. You know, like, you know, the women of America are not just going to be like, well, appearances don't matter. No, I mean, like, it matters to some extent to people. And, you know, as a kid who grew up in the 90s, you know, there was some special moments between me and Lara Croft, you know, back in the day. So I just feel like she needs her voluptuousness in time.
I think that's
if that makes me bad, then.
That's a fair comparison. I mean, I think that they would be there would be something said if.
Now, I guess like, that is kind of a bit of a dishonest analogy on my part, because it's not like the girl who was playing Lara Croft was like butt ugly or something. So, I guess you could say that there's wiggle room there. But in general, that's kind of the point I'm making.
Things, you know, different people have different hills that they stand on. These people have decided it's a sandwich,
right? Yeah, so
yeah, it's, fair enough, it's ridiculous. The next thing is one that I've it's there are people who understand what freedom of speech is, and as somebody that I know for a fact, you take freedom of speech very seriously. That's something that's very important to you. In this climate that we have now, not only with YouTube but with other platforms, where like you had the thing with Alex Jones getting deplatformed. YouTube is censoring out Monkey Jones is another example of somebody that's, you know, getting taken out, and there's not any clear Sargon with Patreon, there's not any a lot of times there's not a clear example of where their infraction lies within their terms of service. Now, I know not for everybody, for some there is, but what's your sort of opinion on those sort of things? We know that the platforms have the right to do that, as they are private platforms, but let's speak to the should they. What's your opinion with those?
Well, I'll go a little bit beyond the should they. Not only should they not do it, they shouldn't have the right to do it. I don't buy the private platform argument. All businesses in this country are subject to regulation. I think that there should be some free speech regulations levied against these companies. Because look, Twitter is more than just a, Like, are we really when Twitter is the new face of the public discourse, are we really going to put that much power in the hands of tech company? I'm going to call them oligarchs at this point. Gatekeepers of all that we can see and hear. I'm not comfortable with that. I'm much more comfortable with the government stepping in and saying, no, if there's going to be any system for banning people, it's going to be transparent and it's going to be something that has rigid, well-defined criteria, not a vague TOS that you can weaponize against anyone at any time. Because let's be honest about what the terms of service are. The terms of service say essentially you're gone anytime that we want. You know, there's some vague rules in there, but what the rules really are they're written so broadly, so open to interpretation that, you know, really they can get rid of anyone at any time. It's you're there at their pleasure. And if you're a website that becomes large enough to represent a mass communications tool platform to the point where the president of the United States is using it as his primary means of communicating with the American people, then there needs to be some oversight on that. And I firmly believe that, look, I know that there's nothing that any of these companies has done violates the First Amendment in any way, shape, or form. I want to make that clear. I'm saying that we need to have the way that media operates has changed. We now have social media as well. And we need to change our thinking about what freedom of speech is to reflect those changes.
Casey?
So along that logic train, do you think that bakeries should be allowed to not bake cakes for gay people?
No. No, I think that they should bake the cakes. If you bake a wedding cake for a straight couple, then I think you should have to bake it for a gay couple because that's a legally recognized union. If someone wants to marry a horse or something, I think you can refuse them because that's not a legally recognized union. Right, exactly. Okay. So
I wondered if the logic train would be that the government should step in.
There was a time when I sided with the small businesses on that, but I've evolved that position over the years.
Okay, fair enough.
It's not legal yet, Casey. You know, once they allowed gays to get married, that's the first step. Next thing, it'll be fucking marrying gay. Their dog and
gays are destroying the world. Don't you know your gay marriage can affect everybody else's straight marriage somehow?
Oh, I know. Also YouTube. Did you guys hear about YouTube? There's two things that YouTube has announced in the past 2 weeks. And after this, Casey, we'll start asking the questions that you have. But they've done two things that I think are very telling about their direction that they're going. Number one, and this isn't what this article is about, but last week they announced that things like Flat Earth, things that are people peddling things that could be harmful to other people or conspiracy-minded – things are going to be not censored in a way of being taken down, but they're not going to be pushed. You have to actively search
not
for.
Not going to be recommended anymore.
Right. Yeah. Is that a form of censorship, you think?
I mean, I would say that if it's not, it definitely ventures into the territory. The big question I have about that is, I wonder how this is going to be interpreted. Because how many – like, who's to say what's a conspiracy theory, right? Mm. I mean, what happens when it's decided that criticizing Israel's human rights policies is really kind of a conspiracy theory? What's going to fall under that purview? How many different opinions that we consider – this is a fairly mainstream opinion. How many opinions that are backed up by hard evidence are going to be conspiracy theories? I mean, in a country like the United States of America that's still like 80% religious, what happens when atheism? That's just a conspiracy theory. Like, I don't know. I don't know how broadly they're going to interpret that. I kind of suspect that it's going to end up being anything that's outside of the – comfort zone of mainstream America or whatever country you're in is going to be the conspiracy. So I'm really kind of, I'm skeptical of this. Now, if it was just applied to, you know, flat earthers or something, you know, I would still be against it, but probably not passionately. But just knowing that this is going to be probably used for something way beyond the purview of what's being described to us makes me super antsy about it.
It's a slippery slope, because I think that you hit the nail on the head. I think it's driven by advertisers. I think this is YouTube's attempt to create an environment where advertisers are essentially selecting the content that they want to see on YouTube, so that if a certain group or thought or issue is not in any way going to make YouTube money, in other words, if the advertisers wouldn't put their dollars towards it, that eventually will fall into that whole not going to be recommended thing. So you're essentially allowing advertisers to select for you. Casey?
Well, so I guess I wonder, like, is there any exception to that whole nobody should be censored kind of thing? I mean, anti-vaxxer stuff is actually really dangerous, and vaccination levels are falling all over the world. And so that the spread of that misinformation is dangerous. And like stuff like Alex Jones, some of the stuff that he says, that's dangerous. The whole Pizzagate thing caused this guy to go up and shoot up a pizza place, and the shit wasn't even true. So like, yep. I don't know. Is there any time that you think it's justified to limit the spread of this kind of information?
Good question.
You know, that's a very good question. And, it's something that should definitely be approached very thoughtfully. I'm reminded of the quote about, you know, you're entitled to your own opinion, but you're not entitled to your own facts. And if there was going to be any sort of line drawn, I feel like it should be drawn there at the level of disinformation. But the danger that you run into when you start to censor certain positions because they're not factually accurate is that, you know, sometimes the people don't really agree on the facts, you know? And I think that a lot of times what you're going to end up with is people who are disenfranchised with the official narrative, even if there's evidence to support it, who are going to galvanize around, you know, the fringes and actually become a little bit, I think a lot of times that there's a radicalization effect to censorship that people don't take into account. Like, let's remember that the guy who initially pushed the fake vaccine stuff, the vaccine autism link, I forget the name of the doctor. He's not a doctor anymore. He was, you know, stripped of all of his medical licenses and stuff, but he's still going around this country giving lectures, and it didn't, censorship didn't sink him. It made him stronger, if anything. And if, you know, you're talking about, we're going to censor this idea across all platforms, I think that to some extent people feel like, oh, well, this idea is being censored. They're not going to say, well, that's just because it's so unreasonable that we can't, you know, that we shouldn't even allow it to be heard. I think that they're going to view it as, well, that idea is so dangerous that they had to put a lid on it. And that's going to make that idea attractive to a lot of people, especially people looking for some outlet of rebellion against mainstream society. So I think a lot of times you end up making these ideas sexier to people by censoring them. But, you know, the spread of misinformation is definitely a huge issue right now. I don't know that the tool of censorship is the right one for the job, but we certainly need some kind of measure in place. But I don't know what that would be.
I think the only solution to this issue for me is to teach critical thinking earlier in school and make sure that it's something that is ingrained in people. Because for me, I think the public as a whole usually does a pretty good job of curtailing bad ideas. So if there are things like you know, the immunization issue, when you have people who are better equipped to think through these issues and to see what, you know, this side is preventing evidence, blah, blah, blah. This side is producing shit evidence. So I'm going to go with this one over here. That is more effective.
To me, when it comes to the vaccine issue, honestly, like, I think the better approach is just saying, Vaccines are mandatory. Say whatever you want about it. They're mandatory.
Yeah.
You know, that's an interesting position for a libertarian. Yeah. Libertarian
left, though. So, like, my libertarianism only goes so far as you know, what I think is economically sensible. I think that, this is, to me, this issue is not about personal choice. Because when you make a choice not to vaccinate your kid, that doesn't just affect you. I think even a libertarian should be able to take that stance of like, yeah, why am I not free to set my own house on fire? It's mine. Well, it might catch your neighbor's house on fire. It affects more than just you. And the same thing with vaccines. Okay. So, I mean, I think I can reconcile it with that. Knowing that you're weakening herd immunity, you're making things difficult for the most vulnerable people. Like, you know, there was a kid I was watching John Oliver talk about vaccines a while back, and there was a kid he was talking about with cancer who wasn't strong enough yet to be vaccinated himself. So he was reliant on the herd immunity of his classmates. So if you choose not to vaccinate your kid and you weaken that herd immunity and you let measles get in there, that cancer kid is fucked. He's going to catch it for sure. So this is not something that just affects you. It's something that affects everyone around you in a demonstrable way that is perhaps life-threatening. So I think that, yeah, it should definitely just be mandatory to get your kids vaccinated. I think that's just a no-brainer.
There are communities all across the country now. I've seen three different articles about this where there are diseases that were pretty much eradicated coming back with a vengeance because of people who are not getting their kids vaccinated. It all comes down to how you if you're able to process information and what you're being told. If you can't handle sorting through evidence and being able to choose what's real science and what's not, then you're fucked. And I don't think that any amount of when you censor things like this and with like flat earth and all this other kind of conspiracies, you actually feed conspiracies, because then these conspiracy guys are able to go, oh, see, they don't want the truth out. They're blocking the truth from getting out.
That's typically how it ends up getting spun. So,
yeah. Casey, I know that you've got some questions from the Twitter questions.
You ready for Twitter questions?
Let's do it.
Sure.
Let's do it.
My cat's trying to silence me.
I've never seen a cat, sit in someone's lap before. That's new to me.
This cat loves me.
Cats usually try to avoid people, I think.
This cat licks my face like a dog. So
that's what's up.
Well, that's weird.
All right, Casey.
It is, and his tongue hurts because it's sharp. But okay,
sandpaper.
No, they're spiky and shit. Okay. Yeah. So Cardinal Art on Twitter said, "Have you ever had the same kind of frustrating arguments with contextualists as you have with literalists? I was raised Catholic. My aunt was a nun, but we were taught to view the Bible as a man's attempt to explain God and an attempt to control morals in society. Love you, by the way."
To me, the contextualists are actually more annoying than the literalists. I can respect the position of a literalist marginally more than a contextualist, because at least a literalist is saying this book is the inerrant word of God, and that's why I live by it. You know, as irrational as the belief that that book is the inerrant word of God is, at least the logical thing you would do from that is, yeah, if this book comes from the creator of the universe and tells us how to conduct ourselves, then we must live by it. But a contextualist is like, well, a lot of it's allegory and interpretation and blah, blah, blah. Like, then why do you live by it? Anything is that. I can interpret morals from Spider-Man 2, you know, Dr. Seuss. Oh, what's the moral of the Cat in the Hat? I mean, like, hey, pretty much anything in terms of human storytelling can give you moral lessons or ideas about how to conduct yourself in the world or whatever, you know, whatever you claim to get from the Bible. Wisdom a movie can preach compassion. A novel can, you know, point out a social ill, and probably better than the Bible, because it's from probably a time closer and more analogous to your own, when human beings have a more advanced knowledge of the world around them. So to me, a contextualist is someone who is just taking an inherently irrational position. This book is not perfect. It's not the inerrant word of God. It's just a bunch of stories that we think kind of have a good meaning or message here and there. Well, yeah, maybe they do. So look at them as mythology and treat them like you would any other story created by a human being. Some of them are good. Some of them are bad. Some of them have good moral lessons. Some of them have bad moral lessons. And they're all open to interpretation. That's fine. Just don't tell me that it's anything to do with God at that point. It's clearly not. If it's either from God or it's not from God. So I actually take the literalists. I have a little bit more respect for them, even though I think most of them are just contextualists in disguise, honestly, because no one is actually following that book to the letter. You can't. It's contradictory, and there's tons of stuff that tons of people ignore. No one's getting stoned for mixing fabrics anymore. So,
right. True that.
Okay. So next is from Mark H. What is your secret for glowing skin?
Just be incredibly pale, and you will glow in any light.
Okay. That reminds me of Jim Gaffigan.
Just make sure you have no melanin or whatever it is.
I feel like that's more of a question for Kyle. How do you feel glowing skin, Kyle?
Just be really white. Cinnamon Toast Crunch. I have a bowl every night. That's the only thing that I do that's in any way an everyday thing. So that's my only advice.
Gotcha. Okay. Dalton Dean Peacock asked, when you made your channel, did you ever expect it to grow to be the size it has?
No, I expect it to be much bigger. I was thinking I'd be president by now.
Did it surprise you? Like, I think there are some people who start channels and then they just blow up and it's like really surprising to them.
No.
Okay. You just think you're awesome. So like it was expected.
Yeah. I mean, I think if anything, I'm vastly underrated. So.
Okay. All right. Dan Thomas.
I would agree with that.
Okay. Thank you.
Dan Thomas is a patron of yours. Said, you were great at participating in debates and hosting them. Do you miss this with, I don't know what DFF is, or does That's debating
deep
call fried. Scotty?
Deep Fat Fried is my, okay. My current podcast I do. There was, what was the question again? What do I miss debates and stuff? No, not really.
Yeah, you missed this.
No, I feel like I had my fill of that kind of stuff. I did a 3-year or so stint on Drunken Peasants and, you know, various other debates over the years as part of like Polypop when I was on, I think it was the Maker Network and, you know, some other stuff. And, you know, it can be fun, but I think ultimately those sorts of things are pretty frivolous and not really too enlightening or meaningful. So I don't know. I don't really miss it. I think it can be fun for a while, but I'm much happier with what I'm doing now. So
you had a big moment, when you were on Drunken Peasants with the whole Milo thing. If some of you guys don't know, the reason that Milo got in all that trouble was because of, what he said on, right. TJ's
on Drunken Peasants and on Joe Rogan, because actually he said it on Joe Rogan first, because that's where I found out. I was watching his Joe Rogan interview. I was like, wow, that's a really, really odd story. So he asked him some questions about it, and you know, his answers were very strange. And of course, that ultimately ended up getting to the mainstream press, who honestly distorted what he said to some extent, but still very odd story. That was a pretty crazy moment to me, though. And I don't think I get enough credit for this. I'm pretty sure I put together the first ever YouTube BDSM themed trivia show. So I think that's my favorite episode. If I look back at like the DP stuff with, Mr. Repsion and, Pimp Monk and, my buddy, Paul's Ego, yeah. All getting whipped and spanked for getting questions wrong by Mistress Jin, who I don't know whatever happened with her, but That was a great fucking episode. The Wheel of Torture or the Wheel of Misfortune or whatever we ended up calling it.
Painful.
Yeah. And, you know, we posted pictures of Paul's ass and Mr. Repsion's ass after that, and they were just like black. So,
oh, it was really man.
I can't
any
even
chance you'll bring it back?
Away. No, I can't even believe we got away with it once.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. While we're talking about Deep Fat Fried.
It was a different YouTube, though. That was before the adpocalypse and stuff. So, you know, things were a little bit more free then. Now they're a little bit more restrictive.
Let's talk about Deep Fat Fried for just a second. What was you're just getting out of DP, which, you know, obviously was a shock to your fans. So when you're setting up a new podcast and you're kind of thinking through the direction that you want to take things, mm-hmm. you opened up the series of Deep Fat Fried with the Tim Allen.
Yeah, Tim Allen
thing. Like, yeah, what was the thought? Why did you end on Tim Allen to start out things with?
We decided to start off with Tim Allen because I figured that would, damn you cat. I figured that would, make it pretty clear to everyone that was a fan of Drunken Peasants that you're not necessarily gonna be a fan of this. Cause we came up with a concept that was pretty different and we wanted to start off with something that was as different as we possibly could. So, we threw the Tim Allen episode out there as kind of a like, hey, this is what we're about now. And people were like, what the hell are you even doing? And then the next episode, I think after that was like Juggalos or something. I don't know. We covered mm-hmm. a whole bunch of stuff. And then it just became apparent to people like, wow, there's really no consistency to this. They just kind of cover whatever every week. And so, you know, I've loved the freedom of that. And not being beholden to any one topic or any one thing of interest and being able to mm-hmm. even find things that maybe people don't think are interesting and try to look for what's interesting about them. We did an episode on fucking toilets, you know, where we went through the whole history of the toilet and just made stoner jokes and shit jokes, obviously. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's super fun to just have that freedom to play around with so many different areas of discussion and not feel like there's nothing you can't do. Feeling like, you know, if we wanted to, we can make an episode about fucking paper clips and still see if maybe mm-hmm. we can make it halfway interesting. So, I don't know. I think that's very freeing, but it also offers a robust array of challenges in terms of keeping the show consistent enough that people, you know, will still regularly tune in. There has to be some ability to expect something, but to not be beholden to any one topic at any given time and to be able to do all kinds of stuff and just have the freedom to explore all these different areas, you know, treating some episodes seriously, treating some episodes comedically, just being able to be all over the map and still somehow a cohesive thing has been like a whole bunch of fun. So
the I'm serial really killer, your serial killer, series I loved. Yeah. Those were fantastic. All right, Casey.
So this is from Valis Johnny on Twitter. Where's the best place to buy fresh produce? And I told him I would ask it even though.
Yeah, you tell you what, if you come over to my place and, you know, just reach up right into my asshole and just pull out whatever, you know, and it's free. It's free to take. It's all free.
You know, it's interesting it's because cornucopia. That leads into our next one. It leads into anal our next cornucopia. One.
Okay, cool.
If you have produce in your ass, it leads to the next question. I never heard why. Oh, sorry. This is from Johnny Bonar. I never heard why he made the banana video. That one is purely for curiosity's sake and is not a judgment of character or anything. He just wants to know why.
I mean, for the same reason people use, you know, dildos or vibrators or whatever sex toys are out there. It was just a low budget sex toy. I'm just like, I don't have a dildo. Here's a banana, you know. Why was there a video?
So why did you
I was
put sending it?
Well, I wasn't like I was like up for Pornhub is the banana video. No, I sent it to somebody who asked for it, who then later hated me over some political disagreement and was like, I'll put this banana video out there. Then it's like, all right, well, that's kind of petty, but whatever.
Yeah.
I did it. I'll roll
with it. You did the right. You did the right thing, though. You owned it. I think that's the.
What are you gonna do?
That's the.
I'm not the kind of person who's gonna be like, I am personally ashamed. I'm not ashamed of what I did. I had fun.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. Stimulated my prostate. I fucking, you know, it did what it was supposed to do. I don't know what this. I feel like it's self-evident. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I do have to admit, I feel privileged that I have not had to watch that.
Yeah,
I've not watched that. I have not
seen that. I don't know why anyone
does
would.
Does that make you feel better?
Does it what? Well, no.
Does it make you feel better that like a person out there has not seen it?
No, I mean, I think the whole world. I think it should be a Super Bowl commercial, personally. But
oh yeah, yeah.
It's gotta get though. You know, it's gotta get old though. That being something that's always asked to you, or you just don't care if it's talked about.
It's fine. Whatever. It is what it is. It's like there's certain things people are going to ask me about. That's just one of them.
Yeah. Casey, did you have any more from Twitter?
No, that was all from Twitter.
No one.
Okay. There's people tagging in the live chat, but I know I told you that we would keep it at an hour and a half, which we're at. But so I want right.
I want to wrap it. What time? Oh, yeah, it's 8:30. So
yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I want to just wrap with one final question from me.
That's good.
Of all the people that you've had you've interviewed, talked with, interacted with over the course of your YouTube career, who has stood out to you the most in terms of I like this person, like this is somebody that has a good direction, and who has been the one person that you couldn't see their point at the time, and you're just not going to see their point. Like it wasn't a good interaction between you two. And you don't have to go with the obvious answer on that. I know what you're probably thinking on that one, but you don't have to go to the obvious answer on that one.
I don't think so. But for as far as the best, I mean, other than you guys, probably Joe Rogan, the star power he has, you know, there's a, when you're in the presence of someone who's a legitimate celebrity, you feel that. At least I do. I feel the star power. I feel it emanating off of them. So that was a thing. The time that I just happened to share a flight with Morpheus from The Matrix, Lawrence Fishburne, that dude just exuded energy and power. So people like that, that are on that level, that tier of, that are just way above anything that, you know, you or I or any of us will probably ever be. Those people just super powerful. And so, you know, sitting across the table from Joe Rogan, you know, and knowing that he's probably going to, you know, he definitely could kick my ass. So, got more money than me. He's got a bigger show than I'll ever have. Got fucking ass kicking abilities I'll never have. He's a cool dude, cooler than I'll ever be by a fucking, you know, country mile. So like, that's intimidating to be in, like, you almost feel like that Wayne's World, like, I'm not worthy kind of thing.
Yeah.
So
was he cool? Kind of
like, oh yeah. Definitely coolest guy. Super nice.
Awesome.
Just awesome dude. Cross the board, just as friendly off camera as he is on. Just really affable, friendly, nice. All the positive things you could possibly say about a person. Gregarious, all that. So that's Joe Rogan, and just awesome guy all around. Awesome to be on his show, whatever. As far as someone who I just did not click with at all, just rubbed the wrong way right off the bat. The time that I had to do an episode of Drunken Peasants with Dave Rubin, could not like that smarmy fuck. And, you know, just constant little gutter snipe remarks from him. And he's just a prick. And he's shallow and he's vapid and he's stupid. And that's how I feel about him. Yep.
I'm glad you told us how you really felt.
Yeah. He is Dave Rubin. I hate him and Ben Shapiro both. I know you don't like.
I've never had to interact with Ben Shapiro, so I suspect that I probably get along better with Dave Shapiro than Dave Rubin, or Ben Shapiro than Dave Rubin.
Okay. any, I'm gonna let you take a second and any final thoughts that you want to put out there for anybody. Plug when Deep Fat Fried comes on so people can catch that. Anything else that you wanna...
I do. Me and my very, very funny friend Paul and my brother Scotty, we do a show every Monday called Deep Fat Fried. You can tune in to see that. We do private episodes on Friday, but, you know, go see if you like the Monday ones before you really worry about that. But every Monday, you could see an episode of Deep Fat Fried on our channel. Every Thursday, we put up clips of us reacting to the news. And there's all kinds of other content that's kind of beyond a patron wall. But see if you like the free stuff before you even worry about that stuff. And, of course, there's my channel, The Amazing Atheist, where all of my, you know, 1,400 videos or however many I have are up. And there's new ones coming out all the time. And this is honestly, it's all over the fucking map. I mean, sometimes it's about politics. Sometimes it's about atheism. Sometimes it's observational humor. It's all kinds of shit. So just don't feel like you're going to be able to expect any sort of consistency and you should be fine. Yep. That's pretty much that. That's my best sales pitch. So go subscribe to that shit and go watch it.
Let me read these last minute super chats that came in real quick. Brian Stevens says everything TJ is saying is possible today. Lysandrian says truck drivers aren't going away soon. Some driving jobs will be, but there are many parts of the industry that will take over well over a decade before automation will be able to replace the driver. Ruben Menendez says happy to see TJ on. Everyone go check out DFF. Brian Stevens says the amazing atheist is Nathan Drake. Are you Nathan Drake?
I don't even know who that is.
I'm not sure either. And then Isa Lycan says TJ versus Destiny on free speech? That would be a good talk.
I'm done with the debate thing.
I got a message from Steve McCray as well. He's the co-host of our other show, The Non Sequitur Show, and it says he likes your monologues. So
cool. Thank you.
Casey, anything that you have to wrap up with before we say goodnight? Anything you got coming up?
Nope. No,
well,
not
good
really.
Luck
like
on
I said,
your,
I have
your midterms, or what you said is midterms. Thank you. Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, I'm
on
getting
that.
My master's in engineering, so it's not fun.
That's awesome. Maybe you can engineer like a Death Star that I can be like the captain of or something.
The amazing Vader.
I'm a Star Trek person. Not a Star Wars.
Well, build me a Borg cube. Then I'll be the leader of the Borg hive or whatever. So
is that a thing, Casey? You can't if you're a fan of Star Wars, you can't be a fan of Star Trek. Is that like a real war, like the furries that we had? Yeah.
No, I mean there are plenty of people who like both. There are plenty of people who hate both, and there are just some people who just prefer one over the other, or just like me, I have watched all of the Star Wars. I just don't like them. Don't like them.
Interesting.
And it's
interesting.
I like the original trilogy, but I like Star Trek better too, so whatever. All right, well, live long and prosper. You guys have a good time, good night, whatever you do.
TJ, I'm actually going to this is something that I wanted to do when you first agreed to come on. I want you to take us out like you do in your videos, but after I tell people that we'll be back here tomorrow at 8 o'clock, where we'll be joined by Bruce to talk about the Forgotten Exodus. But TJ has a tagline that he's coined, and I think it would be appropriate just to let him take it out.
All right. I don't know if it's a little okay. All right. This has been The Amazing Atheist on The Non Sequitur Show. Peace the fuck out.
Perfect.
This podcast was originally live streamed on The Non Sequitur Show on YouTube. New episodes air weekdays, Monday through Friday, at 8 p.m. Eastern at youtube.com/nonsequiturshow. Make sure you never miss a live stream by visiting www.nonsequiturshow.com. www.nonsexshow.com/schedule. For the latest news, polls, and updates throughout the day, follow us on Twitter at nonsexshow or facebook.com/nonsexshow. That's NONSEQ show. If you'd like to get exclusive content, bi-weekly private hangouts with Kyle and Steve, backstage access to chat with guests after shows hosted on your channel, and much more, become a Patreon saint of non sequitur. It ensures we continue to improve our show and brings you into the process at the same time. Visit patreon.com/nonsequitur today while the limited spots are still available.
The following podcast is intended for those who believe bold ideas are righteous, unique perspectives are gospel, and strong opinions are sacred. This is Non Sequitur. Never follow. And now, here are your hosts, Kyle Curtis and Steve McCrae.